Assalamu alaikum everyone and welcome to another episode of the My Muslim Family podcast. We have a very special one for you today. We've been trying to get this guest on for absolutely ages. She's so full of wisdom and mashallah experience on parenting toddlers to teens and has two teenage children herself. We finally managed to secure Sister Shaheen to talk about activism in teens, and I hope it's going to be a really insightful conversation. So Shaheen Mirali began her journey into the field of work and marriage and parenting over 20 years ago. Along with her husband, she began translating and compiling material on parenting, which eventually became the first of the Heavenly Path series, of which there are three books. And these books actually I enjoyed very much myself in my early marriage and when my children were very little. So since then, they have conducted workshops on spouse selection, marriage, young parenting and teen parenting in various parts of the world, including the UK, Africa, Canada and the US. Shaheen has a BSc in psychology, a diploma in Montessori education and is a certified hand-in-hand parenting instructor. As well as parenting classes, until recently, she also ran a business called Buzz Ideas, which sought to help our children love their faith from an early age through products and sharing of ideas. Even though she hasn't been on the program before, Zahira and I have often discussed Shaheen's work. We both attended her parenting course, and the hand-in-hand parenting courses is something that I would definitely recommend. There are lots of resources online as well that you can benefit from. But I look forward to chatting with Shaheen about this very pertinent topic at this time when there's so much turmoil in Palestine. And inshallah, we can learn a thing or two and get her perspective too. So let's jump right in. Assalamu alaikum, Shaheen. It's really good to have you with me today.
Alaikum salam. Thank you for having me.
So I know this is a heavy topic, so we'll try to take it in steps. I think it's an important one because we both have teenagers, and a lot of people listening will have children of different ages. We continue to see really horrific scenes on our screens every day. I think emotionally, it's very difficult not to get very, very taken down by it, very upset, feel very helpless. But I was hoping that we could untangle that a little bit, come out with some tips for us and for our teens. You have a lot of experience with, you know, educating parents on how best to speak to their children and approach them, you know, from zero to, you know, adults. So generally, I think we'll focus on teens, but happy for you to also bring in any other ages that you think it's relevant to. I guess the first question is, you know, it's been 4 months now that we have been seeing what's unfolding in Palestine. And I can honestly say it's just getting worse every day. The despair, the disappointment, the shock increases. But from a parent educator point of view, how has it affected you? And what can we learn from, you know, any approach that you have found helpful in trying not to impact, you know, let it impact your family in a negative way?
Yeah. I mean, I'll start with a personal impact, is that, you know, even within myself, like obviously at first it was very much, oh my gosh, this can't last forever and we have to do something. And then as time has gone, I think I've noticed this in myself and in the kids, is that, you know, the feeling that we can make a change has gone down. So whereas at the beginning, I feel like we were all gung-ho about protests and, you know, sharing and all the rest of it, unfortunately, more and more we're feeling despair in that, actually, what can I really do? And so it's kind of having those conversations about, actually, we still have to play a role. And we still have to continue, and we still have to fight. I just saw a video yesterday of in the West Bank, this child was stuck in a school, I think, with 400 children. And then he saw someone on the streets and he's shouting out to him. And he is saying that we will not stop, we will not surrender. God is with us.
Yeah.
And if they are not giving up, you know, if they're not completely broken by now, I feel like that really touched me. And so my daughter was there actually, and I showed her this video. And I
Yeah.
think also, you know, I was crying just by watching that. And it was like a sudden change because we were talking about something completely fine. And then I came across this video and I'm crying. But I think it's important that they see that. I think it's important that they see that we are affected by it emotionally, the lessons that we're taking away from these things. And to know that this is still very much an issue and not to fall into the, well, I can't do anything about it. And it
Yeah.
is what it is. So some, especially, you know, like you find that when there's fighting or when there are wars, you won't see it. After a while, it will become second news. It won't be the front page news, right? And I think our role is to make sure it does stay very much in their hearts and minds through this, oh, have you seen this video or have you done that? Because I know I used to tell my kids to watch the news. Like I teach 14, 15-year-olds in madrasa as well. And one of the things we try and make them do is stay on top of current events. So they each have to do a current event presentation every week. And I used to tell them, like, guys, watch the news, watch the news, watch the news. But now I'm like, actually, go to social media. You can't get your news from the news. And I find that really ironic that I have to now think about, well, instead of saying, did you know, get this from a main news channel? I'm like, actually, Instagram is a really good source, or even TikTok is a really good source of information, which is really a sign of the times, isn't it?
It really is. It's one of those things that we used to tell them to avoid as much as they can. You know, only I know your friends are on TikTok and I know your friends are on Instagram, and it's okay to be on there for very short bursts, but try not to get too involved with it. But now that's unfortunately the source of our real news. And I think there is irony on so many levels. One of
So
them
much
is that the
irony.
media doesn't inform anymore. You know, even trying to think, and there's so many people dissecting the language and the propaganda, and it just shows how much goes into brainwashing people. And our teens are obviously not immune to this, but also that the leaders are the least able and the least capable to lead us, and that can be quite scary, really. You know, they're leading you all in the wrong direction. But I guess it's a balance between trying to protect them, but not letting them feel what I feel right now, which is actually the whole system that I thought was there has crumbled. I think people probably saw that before me because I'm relatively naive. Trying to protect them from feeling very vulnerable, but also not protecting them from the horror, because I don't think it's fair. All right, to you know, for business as usual to carry on in the home. So you've mentioned your children see you crying. I think that's something that we probably upset us seeing our parents cry on occasion, unless it was for Imam Hussein, and even that maybe was a little bit upsetting. Do you explain what you're crying about? Does that become a point of conversation? Because I think sometimes if it's just tears, it can be quite unsettling for children of any age.
So I think as children grow, I actually think it's okay for even younger children to see a mom, a parent cry, and to know that it's okay to cry, and to know that it's normal to cry. The time when I think tears become distressing for a child is when it's extreme, and when there is a and so A, it's extreme, and B, when it's related to them, like if it's as a result of something they've done. And it's being a reaction to them, and see if it's being used as an emotional tool. Like if they haven't done something and you're crying because they've upset you, then you know that is blackmail, and it's not acceptable. However, if you're crying because of a death in the family, or if you're crying for Imam Hussein, or if you're crying for the news, then it actually just makes them think this is really important. And my mom is, this is how my mom is working through it. And especially if they see their dads cry. So I personally don't think there's it's a, it's can it's too upsetting. I think it normalizes it. I think it allows them to kind of see this is something that's really important, and it allows them to gain a sense of empathy and sympathy. It's really, and especially teenagers, I think, should be able to now start being in tune with what they're feeling, because I feel often as teenagers, they have much more awareness of what's going on, but they perhaps don't necessarily have the outlets that actually younger children do, because younger
Yes.
children cry easily. But as you grow, you kind of just get used to holding it in and getting on with things. You know, like it's not cool to cry and all the rest of it. So I think it's even more important that as teenagers grow, that they do see people around them being in touch with their emotions. And then that's an invitation for them to either just feel sad in the moment if they can't get to the tears, or comfort, you know, and learn from this.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of learning in that. And you're right. I think the more we do it, not that we should overdo it, the more it becomes an okay emotion, and that emotions. And I know you're very big on, emotions are okay. Any emotion is okay. And actually, it should be a signal for us to, it's more of a message to us rather than something to be shut down. Which is, I think, one of the big takeaways from your courses that Zahira and I often talk about on this podcast, actually. So, people won't be strangers to that.
Can I just say
So,
one more thing about that? Often, an emotional response is followed by an action as well. So, when we are feeling something, when we are feeling upset, we are even more determined to, for example, boycott or to go to the protests or
Yes.
to do something. Whereas, if we stuff it in and we just kind of, you know, don't allow ourselves to feel, then we're just going on autopilot and we're less motivated to do that. So that's the other really important aspect of the emotional side of things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So li listening to your emotions for what they're telling you, and using that in a to drive change. I think it's something that I've noticed in myself over the last few months, actually probably from the beginning of October, the middle of October, is I'm so angry all the time. And I don't think many people who know me would describe me as ever being angry. But I think, from listening to scholars before and the reading that I've done, the anger indicates that something is not right and it needs to be put right. And in some ways, being able to protest or to boycott or other things that I've tried to do, like writing poetry or whatever it may be, has been an outlet to almost a coping mechanism for that anger. And if it's something, if you, if we are angry and if we are feeling so down, if we can translate that into an action, it's a way of really channeling it, because it's just so overwhelming, so overwhelming. And I think with regards to teens, I think it can be the same. In the early days, I think definitely in the middle of October, I was angry, but not outwardly angry. But it would translate into maybe being short with them, or being impatient, or expecting maybe more from them because I didn't have the capacity that I normally would. And I found that it made them feel unsettled. And I think it made them maybe play up because they were feeling unsettled. So there was just a lot of emotion, I think, in the house. What would you advise families, to kind of try to correct this if this is the case still? I think we've probably calmed down a little bit, but it was just so alien to all of us and everybody was on edge. How would you advise this is diffused for families who are suffering with this?
So the first step is the expression of that emotion. It's often when we're feeling it, but we can't express it, that it just simmers in us. So having that outlet. So if they are angry, and with them, interestingly, they might not say, "I'm angry at this situation." They will just whinge about something else, or refuse to cooperate, or just be in a grump.
Yes.
So it's really important to notice that and to not take it personally, and to maybe just make allowances for that. Because and you know, like sometimes there's been, I'm not in recent years for me, but like when the kids were younger, if they were in a bad mood, and if I were in a bad mood, we'd just all cry and it would be fine, you know, like we'd be in bed, I'd have my arms around both of them, everyone would be upset, and it finishes, right? So recognizing that they need an outlet as well. And then, like we talked about earlier, channeling that. So I found my kids found going to protests really, like, you know, useful. They also love chanting and all the rest of it. So they their element in them. But giving them ways to use that upset, and do it, you know, do something together. Just like you said, so for you, poetry was a good outlet, but you might need to suggest something that's useful for them. They can try painting about it. They can try writing about it. They can try just, you know, even something as simple as sharing made me feel like I was doing something. You know, and for me, I feel like I encourage my kids to share, especially telling them that actually you are in a unique position. You know, I work from home. I have a few non-Muslim people on my social media, but not that many. However, you guys are out and about every single day. You have access to so many non-Muslims. You have the potential to influence so many more people than I do. So it's actually a responsibility that you have to share, to have these conversations, and to encourage people even to boycott, for example. So, for example, if they were going out into town, and one of their usual stops is McDonald's, then, you know, just say to your friend, actually, I'm not eating McDonald's, and you shouldn't either. And some people, I know my daughter said one of her friends was like, okay, but I'm still gonna go. And she's like, okay, you know, I've told her, I've done my bit. But in that way, when they're influencing change, when they're feeling like they're doing something, hopefully that's an outlet as well, as well as making allowances for that at home and allowing for them to express it through going through the protest, through, you know, being angry there, for example, right into their MP. These are all things that maybe we can encourage them to do.
Is that something you've encouraged your teens to do then, to get involved with writing to their MPs? I know the protests are such a spiritual experience in my, you know, in my experience, and I've taken my children to as many of them as I can. And I do find it's a very good place to vent, to feel that the cause is real, it's ongoing, it's important, and to show solidarity with the Palestinian people at this really, really difficult time. I have to say, I haven't got them involved with writing, but I think they're perfectly capable. Is that something that you kind of needed to coach them to do, or was it?
No, to be fair, mine haven't either. I think again, it's like, what do they feel inclined towards? So if they are artistic, then that's what you can encourage, you know, like your poetry, art. If they are politically minded, especially when they're teenagers, they kind of maybe know, or maybe they're taking a politics class, or they're thinking of PBE at university, then that is the kind of thing that you might want to encourage. I know for myself, I'm unfortunately not that politically literate, but I have been following like chats of people who are, and who are, you know, actively going to their MPs. I've written to my MP. I also feel like our MP is a little bit of a dead end where I'm just getting the same old replies as well. But it's all about recognizing what your kids need in that moment. It could be fundraising. It could be like they're really into, you know, creating stuff, and maybe they can create bracelets and sell those. So it's just about seeing what can I encourage within my A capabilities, within my power, and within their interests as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think this then brings up the question of how do we keep them safe in that context? I guess speaking to friends about boycotts is less contentious, but speaking up in a politics class might potentially get them in trouble. I know my son is kind of into his humanities and politics and history and so on, and it's a difficult balance between kind of trying to tell him that this, you know, there is free speech, but there also there isn't. you know, that not everything is okay to say, and there are some things that we talk about at home that maybe shouldn't be said in a wider context in a public area. I guess it's empowering them but also protecting them.
Yeah.
What's your advice then?
So I feel like a lot of, and actually it really bugs me when some people have said stuff on social media, and then because they're going into, I don't know, some TV show or whatever, they've had to apologize for that. Now, I feel like when they've said something and it's been respectful and accurate, then there is absolutely no need to apologize for that. Where we fall short, or where we can fall short, and where some people, like we see on social media, do fall short, is the language that they use, and, you know, the personal attacks that they do and things like that. Like, you know, and we've all seen it, the trolling can be done very much by Muslims as well as non-Muslims.
Yeah, yes.
But if we're insulting them in that way, then that's not okay, clearly. But if we're making a stand, and if we're saying, you know, that Zionism is bad, and they, you know, it's basic human rights that we are standing up for, then I feel like we have nothing to apologize for in that sense. And we just then need to, in terms of keeping our kids safe, having those conversations about the language that we use.
Yeah.
You know, the even something as simple as sharing what Jews themselves have said. I think that's another really good advantage
Yeah.
of what's happening recently, is that a lot of Jews are now speaking out against this. So sharing those kinds of things as well. So, you know, in a way, and again, this goes down to white privilege. If a white person says it, it's less likely to be debated and criticized.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even going back to falling back on those safe nets as well. Speaking of politics, actually, our MP did go into my daughter's school. And so I encouraged her to participate and to go. And I think one benefit that we have is that there are a lot of
non-whites,
in
yeah,
this
Muslims.
And so it wasn't that she was standing on her own.
Yeah.
It was that she was with a lot of people, and, you know, they kind of all were expressing the same views. So I think that helps for us. But if you don't, I still feel like there is space to stand up if you are encouraged to do so. So I had an ex madrasa student who actually, from a very young age, she was an actual activist. You know, she'd ask me about, like, I have my school, there's a picture of Salman Rushdie, and I'm going to, you know, something. And so she would at every point stand up for herself. Now, I don't know what her parents did, but, or maybe it was just also her
Hats off,
nature, but it was amazing. And recently she actually called in to LBC. She's only, now she's in year 13, but she's been starting to do this from a very young age. So encouraging our kids to, you know, speak up, even though they might be in the minority. Yes, she got into a lot of flack, like she wasn't the most popular with her head at all, because she was seen as a troublemaker. But, you know, at least she could go to sleep at night feeling like she's done what she's, you know, the best that she could do. I think also with age, you have a bit more privilege. So in A levels, you're less likely to be pulled out for wearing a keffiyeh or a badge or anything like that. But then with that privilege comes responsibility as well. So if you see younger kids who are, you know, maybe, I know what something she saw was that they weren't allowed to go into their lunchroom because they were wearing something, then you should speak up. And
yeah.
again, sharing these kind of examples and sharing, like, you know, with your teens, sharing the video, like I shared the video with the teens, my kids and the other teens that I teach and stuff, as an inspiration. Like, look, it is possible. You aren't too young to have an impact, you know? So I think it can be really powerful in that sense as well.
I think it can be, definitely. And some children do have that fire inside them, which is so wonderful to see. But many young people, I guess, do, you know, they have this drive much more than us, which dwindles with time. And it's so exciting to see that in them. And it's We hear that many of the people with the Imam Mahdi will be the younger people, because they stand up for what they believe in, and they haven't got bogged down by the systems and the animosities and things. So it is really exciting, but I guess it can also make parents a little bit worried. So you mentioned activism, and activism, unfortunately, I think in the West tends to be tends to have negative connotations. But I think the more understanding I get of activism and Islam, it's not the fringes who are activists. It should be the mainstream to be an activist. And activism is really amr bil ma'ruf and nahi anil munkar. It's enjoining good and forbidding evil, which is a core part of being a Muslim. So, but activism was always for other people. It was for people who really, really believed in this cause, and were happy to be unpopular and stand up for it. But I guess this has made us a lot more aware that everyone needs to be an activist. It's not something that we leave to other people. And it's wonderful that the youngsters do have this drive. In your courses, for parents of teens, and I know you specifically tailor a course for teens, for my parents of teens, you talk a lot about the teen brain and how that is very unique in the development stage. I think in the context of activism and the current climate, how does the teen brain factor into how you have those conversations? Again, to empower them, but also to keep them safe.
So the teen brain is actually really primed for activism. Dr. Dan Siegel talks about four kind of characteristics of the teen brain. And it's interesting. One of them is social engagement, i.e., the opinion of their peers. And what their peers think of them become really important. And another one is creative exploration. So creative exploration is the fact that actually they don't think in the same old ways that we do. They're very much out of the box thinkers. And if this is nurtured, then they can actually come up with novel solutions to old problems, right? At this time of creative exploration, because they're not just accepting what we sometimes accept because it's been told to them, they're questioning everything. If we don't look at this with the right lens, it can seem to be a right pain, like just do it, because just do it because I said so, or just do it because that's the way it's always
It
been done.
seems argumentative and defiant, doesn't
It
it?
definitely has, comes across as that. But if we see it for what it is, that actually they're questioning it so that what they can believe it for themselves. So they're not just blindly accepting and passively doing something. They're questioning to see actually where does this fit in with who I am? Or where does this fit in with my identity? And in doing so, if this is nurtured correctly, then they can form a really passionate identity, which is the motivating force for them to go do something. So, for example, they can find a cause. You'll see a lot of teenagers are at the forefront of these causes. So, for example, we know Greta Thunberg was at the front of the environmental aspect of things,
So strong, yeah.
very much so. And she did this on her own. The walkouts that she used to do from school, she started off by herself. She would be the only one out of school. So it's really, like a powerful time in their life where if they believe strongly in something, then they can be motivated to do that. And because they're questioning and they're searching and they're looking for answers and they're trying to find actually, who am I? What do I believe in? That maybe not be what my parents believe in, then they can latch on to this activism as a cause. So, for example, a lot of the Jews who are standing up now against the Zionists are young. They are saying that, I'm having arguments with my family. My parents are saying I'm this, that, the other, but I don't think this is right because they're not just blindly accepting. So when our teenagers question us, when they present us with a view that we might find really shocking, Like, how can you say that? Whether it's about this topic or whether it's about Islam
Anything,
or something else, which might be a little bit more strong to our core and we might feel a bit more shaken, then we kind of need to take it with a pinch of salt. They might just be, finding out for themselves. They might be pushing the boundaries. They might be experimenting. But also, if we really trust that, this is the truth and we are 100% sure that this is the right path, then even if they are questioning or experimenting around this, they inshallah will come back. Whereas that when we look at something like the activism side of things, they might be pushing us to be a little bit better ourselves as well, or just giving us a different viewpoint, so I told you this earlier, but when I was going through the topic for today, I was speaking to my kids about it, like just to get their viewpoint as well, because I have my perspective, they have their
Of
perspective.
course, yeah.
And when I asked about Islamophobia, it was really interesting because my son was like, "Does that still really exist?" And I was just like, "Yes, it does." But he's a boy, he's a man, he does
Not
not wear
visibly
the
Muslim.
hijab outwardly. And he, it sometimes it can be a little bit of a bubble. It's just, and again, having those conversations and showing him actually my perspective is very different. My instinct was to like, "What do you mean there's no Islamophobia? That's so wrong, actually." But then I took a moment and I was like, "Okay, that's where you're coming from. And so I'm not gonna scoff at you and say, what, how can you say that? I'm actually just gonna hear you out," and shifted my perspective too. So having those conversations without the reactivity is also quite important as well.
Definitely. Yeah, being open, I guess, to different perspectives. It's funny about Islamophobia actually, because it's massively underreported. And I went to a local kind of a police meeting recently where they said, oh, anti-Semitism has gone up. We've had so many more reports in a very Muslim area, and not many Islamophobic reports. And it made me realize actually I've suffered at the at the hands of Islamophobia, and probably even my daughter on the train with her hijab, but we don't report it. I think we sort of we I we've either given up on anything changing, or we just dismiss people as bigots and that's it, or we have a higher threshold for reporting because we just sort of accept it. And I think as Muslims we really should be reporting. But I agree that some of our children might be in, alhamdulillah, very blessed positions of being in very cosmopolitan schools and environments where they don't feel alone. My daughter was the first hijabi in her school, but definitely not the first Muslim. But it can make you feel vulnerable. And Islamophobia, I think, has. I mean, it definitely has gone up, and it's an important discussion, I think, with our children. A lot of the listeners today won't be in the same position as us. We're in very cosmopolitan London and sort of the home counties, and they might feel that, hijab even is difficult for their daughters, or they can't wear any badges. And I guess everybody will be in a very, very unique position. But having those conversations, like you say, and being open to new perspectives is just so, so important. You mentioned Dan Siegel's work on kind of peer acceptance and being accepted by their peers. I think the wonderful thing about this sort of age group is that their peers will be open to new ideas like they are. But I guess, as you mentioned earlier, with the girl whose head teacher was very uncomfortable with what she did, and Greta Thunberg's, I'm sure, as well, is that they do make themselves very unpopular. So it takes a real courage to, it's one thing feeling it and want to question, but it's another thing taking that step. How do we build that courage into them to not only feel that there's something wrong and it needs changing, and sometimes they might know what's needed, but they just can't make that step. And even for ourselves, how do where does this courage come from? Is it genetic? Is it through our role models? You know, we have in the Ahlul Bayt so many role models, mashallah, and that we are so blessed to have of inspiring, courageous people. Are those the sorts of discussions we should be having with our children?
Yeah, I think this is it. The discussions, the conversations are key because with each of these characteristics of the brain, it can go both ways, right? I talked about peer acceptance, and that's great if you have the right kind of people around you. But if you don't, as you're saying, then the fear of not being accepted is enough to stop you, right? Similarly, with the activism, if you don't get the answers that you're looking for, or if you don't find a cause that you're interested in, you're actually likely to slip into this very confused state where you just lack direction and you lack purpose. So with everything, there is a pro and a con. And our aim as parents is to try and facilitate for the pros as much as possible. So for example, if your child is one of the few Muslims in the school or the few hijabis in the school, then kind of trying to facilitate other opportunities for her to spend time with like-minded people. If it doesn't naturally happen, it's going to have to be very contrived to a certain degree. But we try and send them to Sunday school or madrasa, so they have that time at least with people who they don't have to kind of maybe put up a face for,
Attempt, yeah.
or hide perhaps who they that what their values are, where they can wear hijab amongst everybody else who also have to wear hijab, and it's not such a big issue. Other things like sports clubs, for example, where you are there, for fun, for a sport, but again, it's like a Muslim sports club ideally, and it doesn't have to be, but that's the another way that you can facilitate being around people who share your values and who share your identity. And so you can see that actually everyone else is wearing a hijab and playing sports, and they're absolutely fine, So it's not like, oh, I can't wear it, it's too hot, because it is possible and other people do that. So trying to really create these avenues where you can have people where you can just be yourself with and rest in. So that when you do go back to school and you're on your own, or less people around you, you don't feel so alone all the time. You know that there is a place you can go and just be yourself. And maybe that again will also give you the courage to feel like it's a source of pride and not something that you should be ashamed of,
Yeah.
whatever it is that you're standing for, the hijab that you're wearing.
I absolutely agree with that. I think, you know, I mentioned my daughter was the only hijabi in the school, but I didn't want to make her do it. I tried to create an environment around her outside of school where it just became a natural thing that happens. And I found that really, really, really helpful because rather than constantly going on about it, the environment almost kind of advocated for that itself, and it just became an extension of how I was trying to communicate with her. And this kind of need to belong, I guess is important for all of us, isn't it? So I think once she felt, you know, it was a girls' hijabi group, some of them were wearing hijab, some of them not. Once she felt that she belonged and she was accepted and what she was doing was not abnormal, it made her so much more comfortable with the idea. So this needs to belong, I think. Belonging is so, so important. And it stretches into activism, I guess, because you really feel such a sense of unity at these protests. And like you said, things like bake sales or fundraisers, it doesn't have to be you on your own doing something. It can be you as part of a group, and you might not be completely convinced that it's going to make a difference or it's worth doing. But when you see the group getting stuck in and doing something, and you know, there are people like me just trying to help, it can really, I think, provide that support to continue. So yeah, absolutely, absolutely. This community aspect, which is why these madrasas and sports clubs are just so much more valuable than we realize.
And I think it's okay to also understand that your child might not be there. And sometimes I feel like, oh, but I feel so strongly about this. And I don't see you guys feeling as strongly about this as I do. And then I have to remember that actually there are different influences in their life right now, you know, and they will go through this period of not being sure about who they are, or not being, you know, not wanting to stand out or be too different from their peers. But as the teen brain kind of settles, and as they become more mature, which doesn't happen until their mid-20s really, then you know, we should make allowances for them. I know, and in the meantime, while maybe they're not willing to stand up or be different, as their role models, yes, we can. So, like, if we go to a restaurant, for example, and they're offering us, you know, drinks, and it's still the usual Coca-Cola 7-Up, I will very loudly say, "Oh, but I'm boycotting these. How are you still selling them? Do you have any alternatives?" And you know, my daughter sometimes will be like, "Mom, like, just
Yeah,
please
like take a
order
day off.
something else." Yeah. And I'm like, "No, I'll do it." And it's fine. You don't have to do it right now, but watch me, because I am, and I will, and I will, you know, keep doing it. And inshallah, one day, when they're on their own, you never know, they might just do it when they're ready.
I did actually, when I took my little boy to the protest last weekend, and he doesn't always come with me, but another mum was there, and she said, "Oh, my son didn't want to come." And she said it upset me at first, but then I realized I don't want to push these things, and I respected that. And I thought it's okay. Yes, for us it's going to feel wrong, like, why don't they want to come, and why don't they feel the same drive that I feel? But I guess not being too taking it too personally, because otherwise you can end up pushing them the other way. And it's such a delicate balance
That's it.
between, you know, whether it's hijab or salah or anything, and even activism, you know, how do we find a balance in these things? It's so difficult.
Even sometimes when they do have people, like-minded people around them, it sometimes that also is a can be a hindrance. So, for example, you know, when other Muslims are still going to certain places which we really shouldn't, and then you know, the desire to be part of the group, and they go along, I will object, I will send them why we're boycotting this place. But at the end of the day, now it's their decision, and I can't like pull them out of there. So we do what we can when we can, and hopefully it's like filtering through.
Inshallah. And I think that's the empowering message for parents. And that's the message that I got loud and clear from your courses, is that everyone's doing their best. And I think we just need to come at it from a position of we can only change our own behavior. And that naturally then impacts the dynamics in the family, and inshallah will influence our children, because we can't, you know, they are their own people and they are on their own journey. And I think that was a really empowering and supportive message. And you know, waiting to 25 for a fully developed brain seems such a long way away, even for my older teens. But I guess it also puts things into perspective, helps us relax a little bit, that all is not lost. You know, we are only responsible for ourselves, and we're responsible for guiding them, but not really making them do anything.
We can't. We physically can't make them do anything. So we're just trying our best in other ways. Absolutely.
So, last question is, I think Imam Mehdi, ajallahu farajahu, has factored in our conversations a lot more in recent months. How have you handled conversations around Imam Mehdi and his emergence, inshallah, with your teens? And has it become more salient for them? Because I feel my daughter's feeling more connected and more desperate to make sure her salah is on time and all of that now. How has that been tackled, or how would you advise we tackle these sorts of conversations at home?
Well, the time is really right for these sorts of conversations, right? So if it comes up, then it's one of those things, like, also we have this image that when the imam comes, it's going to be all beautiful and hunky-dory,
Roses, yeah.
and actually it's not. And so sometimes that's like, well, what do you mean it's not? What's going to happen? So it's going to get worse. How can it get worse than this, you know? And just having the understanding that it's not magic, that the imam is going to work within the laws of human nature, within the laws of the universe, that it's not like he's going to come and everyone's suddenly going to be pulled towards him, that we still have to keep doing this work that we're doing, and this understanding that we're having. But yeah, like I feel like this, the whole last few months is a really good push into actually having just faith in Allah at the, as the bottom line. Because like as we said at the beginning, it's so easy to despair. It's so easy to kind of get immune to it. It's so easy to do all of that. Just understanding that actually hasbunallahu wa ni'mal wakeel, and the Palestinian people, and like through their experiences and through how they've handled it, I think has been one of my biggest lessons, and one that I've tried to talk to them about, that actually look at that. How would you react in this situation? You know, and look at, yes, they're crying and they're absolutely within their right to feel despair.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you know, look at the messages that they're sending us. I think I just saw one, you know, and it fits in so well with Ashura as well, right? Bibi Zainab saying, Ma ra'aytu illa jamila. That one day we will look back on this, maybe, inshallah, if we are alive, and we will say, this is why it happened. You know, this is what this led to. And also emphasizing that we have such limited understanding, like we're looking through it, you know, through a keyhole. And I think that's the only thing that's gotten me through this, is that knowing that God is there and that He is watching over. And, you know, while it feels really long and hard, and that's just us watching, God knows what they're going through, that there is a bigger plan. And inshallah, when the Imam comes, then, you know, we can be of a similar faith and like-mindedness like them. I remember there was one video I showed the kids where this mom is walking, like she's being displaced. So she's walking with her child. And as she's walking, she's just telling her child, like, you know, we are going to stand firm and we are on the right path and we are going to make it through, and Allah is there for us. And I'm just like, SubhanAllah, like in that moment,
The
instead of
strength.
thinking about what you've lost, how are you able to do that? But that's our learning. That's how we are going to learn and grow from them, you know.
It's such an inspiration to be strong and firm, stand up for what you believe in, and that even your life is, not too much sacrifice for what you believe in. And such a test of gratitude as well. I think it's a lesson in gratitude like no other. So alhamdulillah for this, the blessing of our faith that keeps us strong and keeps us hopeful, and the wonderful messages in the Quran that just give us so much of this hope. So inshallah we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to grant victory and through everyone's efforts, inshallah. And inshallah it will happen. We have faith that it will happen. It's painful for people watching it, but like you say, nothing like what it is on the ground. We have faith that the oppressors will be accountable, will be held accountable, and that the Palestinian people will be victorious and inshallah rewarded the highest rewards. Thank you so much for your time. Inshallah it's been helpful for parents in navigating these difficult conversations and difficult times with their children and with their teens, and having a kind of a perspective of, that all we can do is our best. Inshallah, Allah will take care of the rest. Wa min Allah al-hidayah, inshallah. Thank you, Shaheen, for your time.
Thank you very much, Zainab.
I really enjoyed my conversation with Shaheen. I found it very validating. I think we're all struggling. Not to compare that in any way to the struggles of the people of Palestine at the moment, and those, say, facing oppression and injustice all over the world. But I think struggling to keep up the kind of the parenting tools that we learn, trying to stay rational. So I found it really helpful to discuss this with her and to gain her perspective on things and learn a thing or two on how to get our children more involved. While also keeping them safe and keeping them focused on what really matters, but without ignoring the injustices, and making sure that they do feel responsible and accountable and able to contribute in any way they can. Inshallah, that's been helpful for everyone listening. And I look forward to having Shaheen again on a different topic, because there are so many topics she could probably bless us with information on and discussions on. For the meantime, inshallah, khair and barakah for you all and your teens and your toddlers. And fi amanillah.